Good to see you all tonight. I'm glad that you are here. We have still a lot of our folks gone. We have a lot of visitors. We are really happy for you to be here tonight. As we begin, Ken Case is going to lead us in prayer.
Study from your word, to learn the things that are contained within it, and pray for the strength and the hope to apply the changes to our lives that need to be applied, that we might better serve you each and every day that you give us life. For those of our number who are unable to be with us, we ask that you watch over and care for them in their absence, and that they might return in the near future. We ask for help for Joe. Remember those things that he has studied and prepared, be able to say them in a way that everybody might gain the most from it, and that you would give us each one a willing heart to accept the things that are contained in the word. We also ask that you look down upon us and forgive us for the times that we have failed to do what's right and sinned against you, and to be ever thankful that we have a Savior.
Amen. So on Sunday, we started working into the second missionary journey of Paul, the latter part of Acts chapter 15 and into chapter 16. And what I want to do tonight is just kind of go back and look very briefly at some of the travels as we get started off in this trip right here. And go through this kind of quickly, but there's something I need to kind of correct a little bit here as we go through. And so we talked about, just as they start off from Antioch of Syria right here, kind of coming up around this way through Cilicia, down to Tarsus, and on over here to Derbe, Lystra, and Iconium. And so we talked about in making that traverse around there, they've got some passes to go through. And two in particular, the Syrian Pass, or Belene Pass, as some call it today, a very tight area that kind of comes right through this mountainous area just north of Antioch. And this was a picture, for those who weren't here Sunday, so we have several that weren't here Sunday, drawn in 1836 of what that pass looked like at that time, which is kind of just interesting to see in another angle of that. And then what it looks like today. Well, then there's another pass that had to be traversed, as after they came over to Tarsus, you know, kind of the hometown or area of Paul, and as they came north out of that area, there's another pass that has to be gone through right in that area there. And this is a new map, because we talked some about Tarsus and Taurus on Taurus, Ford Taurus, right? Am I saying that right? So I kept calling the mountains, the Tarsus Mountains. That's not right. It's the Taurus Mountains. Okay, and I had that right on my PowerPoints at one point, and then right before class I went through and changed them all because I thought I had it wrong. No, I had it right. So I went back now and I've changed them all right, I think. And thanks to Ken and Sandy for helping point this out to me. But, you know, this is a modern map really here of Turkey. Tarsus would be somewhere in here, and what we're talking about this journey coming up through here, we see all this region right here is the Taurus Mountains. In fact, when we talked about in the first missionary journey, when they sailed up to Perga and coming up through here up to Antioch, Antioch is kind of right up here in between these lakes, right in those mountains, a ridge of the Taurus Mountains that go all the way up through there. Or a range that goes there. And so this is the Taurus Mountains all the way down here, all the way up here to Antioch. Remember, we saw some pictures around Antioch where there were some large mountains. And their travel going up to Antioch would, you know, would have not been the easiest thing, because some of those are pretty tall mountains and snow-covered and such. And in fact, even back all the way over here to the Euphrates, back in this, is the Anti-Taurus Mountain. So it's a big mountain range through there. So I wanted to kind of make that correction and get that back. It's not a big thing, but this is, if we're going through geography, we're going to try to understand it, you know, as well as we can. So this other pass, the Cilician Pass that they would have had to go through long ago, looked like that, looks more like this today. And the Taurus Mountains, just to the north of the Cilician Gates modern today. Okay, so we get into chapter 16, and Paul has made it back up to Derbe and to Lystra, which was the end of the first missionary journey that came around to here. Then they went back. Well, this time he's kind of moved into it this way, coming in from the other side. And so back to some familiar territory there again. And it gets us back to the text of Acts chapter 16. Let's turn to Acts chapter 16. And beginning here at verse 6 and reading. Now when they had gone through Phrygia and the region of Galatia, they were forbidden by the Holy Spirit to preach the word in Asia. After they had come to Mysia, they tried to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit did not permit them. And passing by Mysia, they came down to Troas, and a vision appeared to Paul in the night. A man of Macedonia stood and pleaded with him, saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." And after he had seen the vision, immediately he sought to go to Macedonia, concluding that the Lord had called us to preach the gospel to them. Okay, so, you know, kind of looking back here at the map again and seeing that after leaving Derbe, Lystra, Iconium, coming to Antioch, Paul was expecting that he would be preaching in this part of Asia. Sometimes we call it Asia Minor, you know, of that time. Of course, this is all part of Turkey today. But no, not in Galatia or Asia or Bithynia. They tried to go into these other areas, but it were always turned back by the Lord, that this was not where the Lord wanted them to go. And you just stop and you think about this a little bit, that the intention of Paul, Silas, and Timothy was to spread the gospel. This was their purpose and their intent. And I've thought some about how peculiar it must have seemed that as they were trying to go to these places to do what they had come to do, to preach, that they were forbidden from doing so. I mean, doesn't that seem peculiar? And you try to think just a little bit about how they felt about that. And just the confusion of that. But the Lord had other plans, and I think that's the way that we have to look at that, and the way that I'm sure they had to look at that too. So, one of our questions, and maybe some discussion. Explain the Spirit did not permit them. Why not? Why didn't the Spirit permit them to go to Galatia and Bithynia, Asia? I mean, how would you respond to that? Sure.
It's not the Holy Spirit. That means that Philip couldn't be somewhere else. He had a job to do there. And he knew that person, the eunuch who was reading Isaiah, was searching for truth and wanted to understand, you know, who the prophet was speaking of in that particular case. And maybe, you know, the scenario could be very similar in that the Holy Spirit knew where the parts were getting salt or open to the truth and to the gospel, and that's where Paul and Silas needed to go.
Good idea. Good response. You know, Paul and Silas and Timothy, they had a plan. God had a different plan. And sometimes, I'm not sure if we think as we should sometime about what is God's plan. We can get so churned up on what we think needs to happen, what needs to get done. We could even fail to ask God for what is your plan, looking for direction. I mean, I'm not expecting a vision with a Macedonian call. I've wished for that at times, I'll have to admit. When it seems unclear, you know, what's the next step? What needs to be done? Where do I need to be? Have you been in that situation before where you're just not sure? What should I do next? You know, what would the Lord have me do? And there's a nebulous time where you're just kind of groping your way through, wondering what to do. And, you know, I'll tell you what came to my mind is, as preachers from time to time, when you're considering maybe making a move or a change and you're not sure what to do or where to go, it's a really hard time. And I told Sandra one time, please take this in jest as I mean it. And I told Sandra one time after we had prayed, I said, you know, a strategic lightning strike right now would be helpful to me. You know, to give me some help and direction here on what, you know, there's some decisions about where to go. And it's like, I don't know what to do. Well, in time, it all kind of sorted out. You know, but there was not a vision, you know, like what Paul experienced. Other thoughts? Comments? I mean, when they crossed over into Macedonia, there were some opportunities that presented itself, it seems, right away. You know, it was low-hanging fruit, so to speak, where some things happened right away. Of course, there's some other things we don't know. There are some churches that are established in part of this area where Paul traveled through that it seems Paul didn't establish, someone else did. I mean, remember we said on Sunday, when we're going through like the journeys of Paul, the Bible record is following the work of Paul. There's a lot of other things going on too that's not recorded. There were other preachers, there were other apostles, there were other disciples that had gone out into all the world that are teaching the gospel. You know, all of that's not recorded for us. You know, perhaps there was effective work already taking place in Bithynia that did not require the apostle being there. So there's those things that we don't know. What we do know is God made a deliberate call for Paul to come across into Macedonia. I guess one point I just wanted to kind of emphasize is that when we are searching for direction and we're wondering what to do, it is always right to pray to God, seeking counsel, seeking direction. And by and by, in some way, there will be a door that opens. You remember in Colossians, you know, Paul, you know, said to pray that doors will be open for the gospel. You know, and that's always kind of impressed me. You know, that the apostle would be praying that doors would be opened. You know, and I've said before, if Paul would be praying for such things, certainly we need to be doing that too. So, just some things to kind of think as we kind of work through that right now. You know, one of our questions, we may have already answered this. What comments can you make about the vision that changed the course of their travels? Well, it was God's means of speaking to Paul. It still left them having to decide or conclude what they were to do. It just said to come on over. I guess they figured out the preaching part okay and without any problems. But as the text said, you know, they came on to Troas. So they traveled across all of this region right here. You know, we're talking several hundred miles there. But we're not, you know, on the map it looks like a hop, skip, and a jump. I mean, it was quite a distance that they traveled, passing all of those cities and surely wondering, why doesn't God want us to stop here? You know, but came to the port city of Troas all the way out here. And so, what can we know about Troas? Well, you can go there today. Now, there's a modern city close by. It's not called Troas. But some of the remnants of the ancient city are still there. As we've seen, as we've gone through some of the travels, there are some places that have been identified as ancient cities, but they haven't been excavated in any way. There's just a tell or something as that. But now in Troas, it's there's some very visible signs of the ancient city that was there. You know, Troas had a natural deep harbor, you know, that made it easy for shipping in and out. And it looks as though there was some kind of a pier that was in this area, you know, of long ago. And, you know, somewhere along this beach, along this harbor, is where ships came in and where Paul and Silas and Timothy boarded a ship. You know, somewhere along these beaches here is where they walked and either could get to a ship or had to get on a skiff and go out to the ship, however that was. But it's somewhere right through here where Paul walked. Some of the old streets of Troas are visible. Much of the old city of Troas has not really been excavated, but there's some places where you can see the old city. This region, this part of here on the hills, is part of the city, the marketplace. There was a temple that was sort of in the center of that city there. What kind of a temple? I don't know. Probably, you know, an idolatrous god, most likely, is what that was. This picture right here kind of just gives a really good view of on the hill of the old part of the city, looking down to, you know, where the harbor would be just out there. Actually, it's a very pretty area, to me at least, to look at that. So that's Troas. That's where they left out from there to make their way on to the other side. Other thoughts? Comments? All right. You know, it would appear that there is an addition to Paul's traveling companions here. There's just a little change in the text. Huh? Did you catch that? I mean, we know that it's Paul and Silas, and they've picked up Timothy, right? And so there's three. But I'm suggesting they've picked up someone else. Who's the writer of this book? Luke. And all the way up to this point, when he's been talking about Paul and his travel companions, it's been they. Paul and Barnabas, they. Paul and Silas, they. Paul and Silas and Timothy, they. Something changes in verse 10. Do you notice that? And after he had seen the vision, immediately we sought to go to Macedonia, concluding that the Lord had called us to preach the gospel to them. They picked up Luke. So Luke had already been in Troas. Now, I don't know how long he had been there. I'm not sure exactly what all he had been doing. I presume he's been preaching there. There's no indication that Paul preached here as he came through. Now, on another trip or return, he is going to come through Troas in chapter 20, and he's going to preach there then. But he didn't establish the church. It was already there. Well, could Luke have been the one that worked and established that church? I don't know. Possibly. Because we know he had been there. But he's leaving there now, and he's leaving with Paul and Silas and Timothy as they go on across the Aegean Sea, and they're heading over to the other side. So if you have an outline, we're looking at outline or lesson number 8, moving into that now as we continue in Acts chapter 16. So Paul's leaving Asia now, and he's going to set foot for the first time into Europe. And the gospel is going into Europe because evidently this is where God wants him to focus now, because it's God who has called him over to that side. And so as they come across, they come to a port city called Neapolis. And from Neapolis, it's about a 10-mile walk to Philippi, which is where we're going to be going tonight and spending a little bit of time there. And so in the text, in verse 11, the story continues. Therefore, sailing from Troas, we ran a straight course to Samothrace, and the next day came to Neapolis, and from there to Philippi, which is the chief city of that part of Macedonia and a colony. And we were staying in that city for some days. Okay, why would the text call Philippi a chief city? There may be several reasons that can come up for that. You come up with anything? Well, what is it? What would it indicate? There's a lot of discussion on that point. I mean, as you look into the ideas of some of the scholars, any ideas? It's a Roman city at this time. And so that has some significance. Some have said, well, it was the capital of that area, but yes, sometime before when this land had been battled over. It's kind of interesting, as the case of a lot of Bible places. This was a much sought-after region because there were some riches there. In fact, in the 3rd century B.C., there were some major battles that took place there because there was some gold not far, some gold mines not far from Philippi. And at one time, it is said that they were mining 1,000 talents of gold a year out of those mines. That's a lot of gold. And so you can understand why there was such a desire, you know, for different, whoever was reigning at the time in different areas, wanting to fight for this area right here. Well, some have said, well, it was a capital city of Macedonia. But that's not actually true. I mean, I guess I would have thought it being called the chief city. That's what kind of came to my mind, that at least of that region or that colony, that it was a capital city. No, not actually. Amphipolis holds that distinction, which is not just real far away, though it wasn't as big as Philippi became, but it was actually the capital of that area right there. But maybe it's the chief city just because of its importance. Philippi really grew in importance as time went on. So it's a leading city. We can say that much, you know, for sure. Thoughts? It was very strategic, the city of Philippi, in just a number of ways. The riches we talked about, you know, already, but it was on kind of a main road that went right through. I mean, if you were traveling, if you came in off the sea at Neapolis, and you're trying to go to Thessalonica or anything to the southeast, you're going to go through Philippi. I mean, that's just where the road went, the main road, and that's the way that you were going to go. Let's get back in some geography here again. In fact, we have several places to stop here. I mean, just looking at the map, we're trying to get to Philippi. And so we've left Troas over here. We're coming across the Aegean Sea. We're going to come past Samothrace, which is one of these Greek isles in here. Actually, there's a number of islands. Most of them are very small. Some are useful and inhabited. Some are not. Samothrace seems to be one of the larger ones, but it wasn't particularly a helpful island. I mean, it was all rock for the most part and couldn't really grow a lot on it. And it was mostly mountainous, but it was one of the bigger ones, and so it kind of stands out. And you sailed past that as you were coming through. It kind of looks like this today. And you said, you know, pretty rocky. And as you're sailing by on the eastern and northeastern side, this would kind of be the view. And it has some large mountains on it. A little closer look there of, I'm not sure, but this might be the only city that is actually on the island. I'm not sure about that, but I didn't see any others. And it only has this whole island has a population of like 2,800 people today. I mean, what it had back then, I don't know. They didn't stop there. They just went on by. But there were people that did stop there because there was some pretty significant things that took place on this island. And again, you kind of wonder why. It's like, why would somebody pick to live here? Because it's mostly rocky. It's real hard to grow anything. But there were some reasons for that. So sailing by, you know, as Paul did, would have been somewhere out in that water, out over there to that side as they came by. But like I said, there are some people that came to the island. Because going back to 7 BC, 700 years before Christ, there's evidence of people inhabiting the island. Now, their purpose, to a great degree, was to worship their gods. And on one of the mountains there, I forget the name of it, they had cut terraces, large rows of terraces in the side of the mountains where they built shrines. And they had little temples that they built there that are still there today, that you still see these today, where they went and they worshiped their gods. And some of them would have been of some size, it looks like. It's a place that's called the Sanctuary of the Great Gods, is what they call it. Obviously, we're not talking about Jehovah God. We're talking about the gods of their idols that many would have followed in the day in that time. Interesting to me. Now, some of these here, when was this all built here? I don't know. I know some of it goes back to 7 BC. I don't presume all of it did. But it's old. And I presume much of it was there when Paul was sailing by on his way to Philippi. And so that's Samothrace, as it's called out here in the text. From Samothrace, they went on and they came to Neapolis, as it was called then, a port city on the other side. This is where Paul first sets foot in Europe. Here's the modern city there. Kavala, Greece, is what it's called. It has a deep port. This is where the port city was, where they would have come in, somewhere right here. It's a modern city today. As we follow the text here in Acts chapter 16, this is the gateway into Europe that Paul was taking when he was going to carry the truth that God was sending him to do. And in his third missionary journey, Paul's going to come back through here again, as well. Some interesting things, when you look at in the modern city today, you see this aqueduct, very tall, that comes across here. This goes back to between the 1st and the 6th century. This was built and being used during that period of time, and what provided water to the city there. Kind of interesting to see that. It's still there even in today, part of the modern city as you see it today. Here's something else that was interesting. There is on the Acropolis, on the hill there at the city, there is this fortification that is built on the top. And this goes back, these walls, this is where the walled part of the city was, on top of the hill. A pretty sizable area that's walled, and this goes back to the 3rd and 2nd centuries B.C. And so when you think about Paul sailing into Neapolis, and all those houses we were just looking at wouldn't have been there. There might be some houses down by the coast. And the aqueduct, whether the aqueduct was being built, then we don't really know. But the fortifications up on the hill were there. Paul saw those when he sailed into the harbor and when he got into the city. Kind of interesting to see something that's that old and still that intact, to see that. This is the city, the harbor at night. Some things that Paul would have seen long ago. And so that kind of takes us on the journey that Paul and Silas and Timothy and Luke have just made. Whether there's some others that are traveling along with them, we don't know. That's not revealed to us. But when they get there, they're going to soon meet up with Lydia as they get to, going on here to verse 13. Let's move on just a little bit further. Verse 13. And on the Sabbath day, we went out of the city to the riverside, where prayer was customarily made. And we sat down and spoke to the women who met there. And a certain woman named Lydia, a seller of purple from the city of Thyatira, who worshipped God, heard us. The Lord opened her heart so that she heeded the things which were spoken by Paul. And when she and her household were baptized, she begged us, saying, "If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come to my house and stay." and she constrained us. Well, several things for us to consider there. Let me look at my pictures and see what's next. So we've made our way up to Philippi now. Well, in fact, let's look here for a minute at the way of going from Neapolis up to Philippi. So there was a major road that came all the way through that region. This is a modern picture, and it shows this road, the Ignatian Way. Okay, so like Philippi is here, Neapolis right here, Philippi there. Remember, that's only 10 miles from the coast to Philippi. And the road that would take you there was the Ignatian Way. Now, this road is actually 396 miles long, I believe it was. There was a road that went that way going back in the first century and before. When the Romans really controlled that area, and going into the second century, they built a real highway through there, the Ignatian Way. And many places of it can even be seen today. And it would come all the way from this side over here. Next picture. From what would be like Albania through Macedonia, Greece, and over to Turkey, like Istanbul, way over here. Our focus is right in here right now. A road that still today looks like this here. This was the Roman road that was built. Looking back to Neapolis, if you're on the way to Philippi and you stopped and you looked back to Neapolis, you know, there's the city. There's the harbor. You know, a Roman road built to specification. You know, 6 meters wide, 19.6 feet wide. And amazing to me, a road that could endure as long as it has, you know, 2,000 years, you know, and here it is. And even some of modern highways are riding on top of what was that old Roman road, you know, going through. Well, let's get our focus here on Philippi and Lydia. Now, here's an interesting story. The first conversion that takes place that we have recorded for us of Paul and Timothy and Silas, Luke, as they come into the city of Philippi, some of our questions. Why were they at the river on the Sabbath day? I mean, of all places. I mean, they found Lydia and some others at the river. Why were they at the river on the Sabbath day? Well, there's water, but they weren't Christians. And they didn't know about baptism in Jesus Christ. There was no synagogue in Philippi. Now, why wouldn't there have been a synagogue? You know, there had to be 10 Jewish men before there could be a synagogue that was built. So I think it gives us some indication about the population. The Jewish population of Philippi must have been pretty lean. And remember Lydia, well, she wasn't even from there. She had traveled to there from Thyatira, from Asia. And so she's just kind of added to the numbers there. Well, why would the Jews be meeting down at the river? Is there a reason for that? Yeah, they still had the ceremonial cleansings, you know, to follow. And so I would think likely that's why they were there. If there was a synagogue, there would likely be some kind of a pool or a cleansing pool, you know, for the ceremonial cleansings. Well, they don't have a synagogue, so where's the next best place to go? Well, there was a good river that went on the west side of town. And it would seem to me that that would be, you know, where they were at. Well, let's think here about... Yeah, go ahead, Neil.
Mm-hmm.
Could be. And I can only imagine that a river, because it's a river that still flows today, it seems to be a river that flows well, that it would have been used for a lot of things in that time. So what do we know about Lydia? Well, let's think a little bit more about where we are and some things that's going on here. That's not really what I want. Let's go through something real quick, because we're going to talk about Lydia, and we'll come back on that. Lydia, a seller of purple. Just think about what her business is and what it seems has brought her to Philippi. So here we have somebody who's described to us as a seller of purple from Thyatira. In character, she's described as one who worships the Lord. Let's talk just a little bit about this seller of purple. What do we know about that? What's that?
Royalty.
Why did royalty wear purple of all things? It was expensive. Everyone couldn't afford purple. I mean, if you saw purple on somebody, it indicated some wealth or royalty. And I almost get the impression that the more purple it was, the more value that it had. Because there were some purples that were not very strong, not very bright, depending on where that came from. And to have a darker purple was something that was harder to get. Well, how did they make that dye? Here's kind of an interesting thing. Yeah, there were these seashells that murex is what they are called, that has a vein in the inside in its back where there's a purple substance, a dye, and that was mined, so to speak, you know, to try to get a few drops out of these shells, and you don't want to get just a few drops out of that. And so if you were making dye from these shells, well, you had to have a lot of them just to get a little bit of dye, enough to make wool or yarn, whatever, to be purple. Well, what's interesting is that these seashells, these murex, were found in the Mediterranean Sea. Well, you know, we're not even close to the Mediterranean Sea, you know, when we're in Philippi. In fact, you know, Lydia was from Thyatira. That's not close to the Mediterranean Sea. That's in the middle of Asia Minor. And where these seashells were primarily found was on the coast of Palestine, like around Tyre, is where these were most readily found. That's a long way away. And so many kind of attribute, you know, this purple dye is coming from these seashells. And it is true that that is how they made purple dye. But there's another way, too. Now, if you lived near Tyre, or if you lived in Palestine, you would use those seashells to do it, even though it was tedious work to do that. And sometimes when dye was not as good, when it was not as dark, what people did is they just broke those shells up and they crushed them and then washed them to get the dye out. Well, that wasn't as good. That didn't make as dark of a dye as being able to work through that shellfish and get the secretions out of it to make a dark dye. See, that's kind of what these shells look like right here. And this one over here is in water, and it has the purple that's coming out. And that's how they would make that dye like that. Very tedious. It's very slow work. That's also what made it so valuable, because it was so hard to do. And if we come back and think about, okay, you know, Lydia's up here in Philippi. She's from Thyatira. But where those seashells are found are down here on the coast by Tyre. That's a long way away. That's probably a better part of 1,000 miles. That's a long way away. But Thyatira, as well as Colossae, you know, were two areas that were kind of known for their wool industry and making purple. That's what Lydia does. That's where she was from. Well, there's another way to make the dye, and that is from a root called the madder root. And it just so happens to grow around Thyatira and Colossae in that part of Asia Minor. And so I'm getting the impression that the dye and the wool that Lydia had and was making probably came from a root, that madder root right there. Which, of course, you know, you can still get those plants today. They still grow them. They make dye today, you know, in that country, you know, out of this madder root. In fact, if you go online, you can buy a madder plant. You can get the roots. You can make your own dye. Give it a try. Tell me how it works out. And so that's kind of where I'm thinking Lydia has come from, you know, and what she is doing. This is yarn right here that was made from the madder root. And depending on how strong your dye is and how long you hold it determines how dark it's going to be. But this was made with that madder root. So, now we know some things here just about Lydia. You know, as far as, you know, why she's in Philippi. It seems that she is there because this is her work. This is what she's doing. But the text tells us some other things really important about her character. I mean, character. She's industrious. We know that. We can see that. But character in the idea that she worshipped God. Now, was she a proselyte? Was she a Gentile that had converted to Judaism? I don't know. But she seems to be there with some others who were looking and seeking to worship God. And when Paul and the others came along, she was willing to hear them and, you know, what they had to say. And several points here for us to think about and consider. In fact, we're going to hold this to Sunday because we're just starting into this. This is the description of Lydia that I really want us to know. I mean, knowing about her work in the dye industry, yeah, that's kind of interesting. But if you forget that part, that's okay. But this is the part of Lydia that I don't want us to forget. That we need to see and understand this next part of her character. This is where we'll start up on Sunday, Lord willing. So look very carefully at these verses here, 14, verses 13, 14, and 15 about Lydia. And then in the rest of the chapter, you know, the other just an incredible event that takes place, Paul and Silas being put in jail, the Philippian jail, and the events that take place there. We need to spend a little bit of time looking at that. That'll be our focus on Sunday. Other thoughts, comments that you have? All right. That's all I have. So glad that you are here tonight.